How's it going?
Hey Joe, so here we are again. Here we are.
Here we are again. So it happens. So
I have this feeling of us getting together and shouting from a mountaintop, but hopefully it's we have a better audience than that.
I mean, I thought you meant literally like going out and going rock climbing or something like that and shouting from there, which would
We
be a lot of fun
do
too.
need to do that. We do need to do that, right?
That'd be
And
fun.
yeah, but I mean, like, it's like I always like I love getting together and talking to you, right? Because it's like
Likewise.
being on the same page and have, but also knowing that, hey, Joe may tell me where I'm wrong and so on, right?
And
Just
likewise, yeah.
being able to have that kind of conversation, right? Being able to go full speed.
Yeah. Well, so you sent me a text. What was on your mind? So for the audience, this is how it works. Gordon usually sends me a text, and then I'll send him one, and then we're like, oh, let's talk about that on the podcast. So what was on your mind this time?
Let's talk about this in public. I was thinking about like, so one of my prevailing themes the last few years is like, right, why is the why of like, why aren't data projects more successful? Why do so many of them fail and so on? And I think, I have a slight twist to that today. I mean, it's kind of the same message, but I want to explore is like, the basic point is that, your data, this is the message for the data teams, right? Your projects are not as valuable as you think they are, right?
Ouch.
You're not. You're not delivering as much value as you think you are. The organization doesn't need you as much as you think it does. And now we got from there, right? We got to dig into the why,
Okay, so let me ask you this. Those are pretty strong statements. If you were to walk into a data team or say a conference and say this, I'm sure people would look at you a bit funny, probably flip you off or something. But I think there's some validity to what you're saying. So why do you say this?
Well, because the evidence matches it. And let's take that example. You said walk into a data conference. Forget walking into a data conference. Let me walk into a conference of business users. Let me ask them, hey, how much value are you getting from your data teams? How much value are you getting for those projects they've delivered for you? How essential is that to your business, right? And I'm sure they'll have some examples. But they're gonna. But if we were to walk through all the deliverables and all the projects and stuff and ask, like, hey, for this dashboard, how do you use it? What would happen if this dashboard wasn't available tomorrow? Oh, and they might even say, well, most days it's not available because it's late, right? Something along those lines, right? And so I think the reason I say that most data projects are not as valuable as they think you are, or your teams are not contributing as much, is because if I would ask the stakeholders, I bet you they would support that idea. And it fits the notion that we all generally agree that projects fail, frequently fail. And I think it's so. I think the evidence matches, right? So it's like, hey, let's dig into why is this the case? If you accept this is the case, and I'm happy to explore a little bit more and build the argument, but from there we want to go on to the why.
I guess it also begs the question, if you were to walk into a conference of business users, are they aware that there is a data team?
Yeah. How about the, I might be, head of product or something like that. And like, oh yeah, we've got a data team. I'm not really sure what they do. That's not what you want to hear. You should not want to hear. And in the meantime, over on the data side, we complain about like, oh, we're a service bureau and we're not partners. We don't have a seat at the table. We're not being included in decisions, right? Which is all evidence then, again, that if you're not being included in the decisions, then you probably are not adding that much value. There might be some pray and spray going on too. Like, hey, I produced these dashboards and reports. I did what was asked of me. I threw it over a fence.
So we're talking about data teams that produce reports and dashboards
Well,
then?
yeah. I guess I'm thinking primarily about internal business intelligence and analytics, right? I mean, I think ML-driven products and so on like that are kind of a different beast because that's it's not the technology, it's rather like what is the use case. But I'm thinking about it where we are augmenting, we're enabling people to make better decisions. So it doesn't have to be just internal, right? It could be your customers too. But when we're trying to help people make better decisions and drive better outcomes, epistemology, right? Use of knowledge.
Yeah, that's an interesting one. My take is that I feel like a lot of data teams are in, if you can remove the word data from their day-to-day function, mm-hmm. right? And mm-hmm. and so we're helping, say, marketing grow with this initiative or something like that.
Yep.
That's where I've seen, quote, data teams or data practitioners be successful. I think when it's this passive exercise of shipping out dashboards and reports, for example, to your point, where that becomes definitely a bit, I think, questionable in value add.
Yeah.
So.
Yep. I agree. So what's the difference there, right? So the difference, one of them, things you just pointed out, one of it's passive.
Uh-huh.
So of course the opposite is active. So what does active look like? How do I actively engage with marketing?
Well, I think actively engaging with marketing means you're there's this notion of maybe embedded, say, quote, data people on a team. This is sort of my role back in the day. I was a person who had strong data skills, but also just worked with a variety of different departments, right? So I didn't think of myself as a data person back then, even though I had all the chops. I really considered myself to be more of somebody who was just part of the team I was working on, right? And so data didn't really enter my mind. That wasn't the first consideration. And so I think that's why I was effective too, is because I'm just part of the crew, right? I'm helping them slice and dice numbers, which is what you do in marketing. You better be doing that in marketing. But I wasn't apart from them, right? And so I think it might be one of the big differences. I don't know. What do you think?
I totally agree with you, right? You know, and I've always had a problem with the term data team in general,
yeah.
and data driven, right? Because that's too low level. Data is table stakes, right? And data is not the same as knowledge, right? We take data as a measurement in reality, and we try to take that measurement and derive some kind of understanding from it. So, you know, the example, here's a billion financial transactions. What are you going to do with it?
All right. Yeah.
Well, here's some knowledge, right? Here's revenue over some period of time, and we attribute some change to these various factors. That's knowledge you can make a decision on. That's, you know, so really we aim too low with data. So I like where you're coming from. You were a practitioner, you're acting as a practitioner on the marketing side to drive better outcomes. Data was a table stakes skill to support that, you know?
Yep.
And so coming around from the other direction, you know, this is the, one of the things, part of the reason why I started thinking about this, I was thinking about, like, how is producing data products different from producing than software engineering? And then why is it that when we produce a knowledge product as a data team, we have trouble supporting it? Meaning, like, we don't have a support team to hand it off to, there's not really a platform team that's going to maintain it in production and so on and so on. Yet that's kind of normal on the software side, right? If I create an e-commerce site, maybe I put in a shopping cart of some kind, yeah, I might be on call as an engineer, but ultimately I'm not gonna be running that thing in production. Mm-hmm. I'm not gonna be thinking about like all the compute necessarily to scale it across spikes and so on, right? My job was to design that UI and that ability to record a transaction. And you can have that kind of process for like an e-commerce store, because in theory, the margin is healthy enough to support those people.
Yeah.
We don't have that with data products frequently because we don't have enough margin, because our projects are not valuable enough.
So when you say margin, so with a product, say a software product, that's something that's, a customer can purchase. I add more features. I can hopefully identify the ROI on those. So what I hear you saying then is the quote knowledge products that we make, and I'm guessing these are for internal consumption,
right?
Internal consumption, that these have questionable ROI, probably typically low margins. So, and that leads me to wonder then, is it because that these knowledge products aren't impactful enough? Or, because I would think that a knowledge product that helped move the needle a ton for a company would obviously pay for, say, the data team, at least in terms of the fixed costs that you have there. But
that's the thesis, right? That's
what
the assumption is. But you know, so often, like you know, you've been asked to build teams in the past, and I've been asked to build teams, of course. But the people who are asking us to build these teams frequently don't know what they want you to build. They're like, "Well, build me a data-driven culture."
Yeah, right? And what is that exactly, right? Like,
right? It's like... right? I actually rather be asked for. You know what? Help me improve, help me increase revenue by this percentage.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'd rather have to, and maybe that's, and sometimes you might react to that like, whoa, how am I going to do that? well, okay, I'd actually rather be asked that question in some sense and back off and work backwards from that, as opposed to, like, sometimes it feels easy to be keeping sort of vague, hand-wavy requirements because you kind of know you're not on the hook at first, but that's a trap.
Oh, it's quicksand.
Right?
Yeah. It's totally tough, or right? A bear trap. It's easy to get into and really hard to get out of, and it's going to be painful. You're absolutely right. I mean, okay, so, I mean, you do sports, I do sports, and typically, say, in, like, a running race, there's a distance you have to go. There's something where there's a goal at the end, right? But data-driven culture is a weird one, where I've heard this, too, like, or we want to do AI. I'm like, I have no idea what that means. And that's every company right now that's, quote, doing AI or trying to.
Yeah,
and before that, it's like, we got to do big data and machine learning and all this stuff. No, you're absolutely right. If we were given the goal to increase revenue, we'd figure it out, right? But that assumes that you got to understand the business that you're in.
And you know what? And then if you come to me right now and say, "Hey, you know, Gordon, so I've got a shiny degree from a top school, and I've got 2 years experience writing SQL and Python." I'm like, cool. All right, awesome. So you can write a program. And you can query a database. Okay, what else can you do? What do you mean? Like, can you, help my product teams understand which features are most popular? Can you help my finance team identify which customers are not worth having? You know, or help my marketing team stop acquiring bad prospects? They say, well, I don't have any of that experience. I'm like, I don't have a job for you. Mm-hmm. And I don't know what I mean about it, but like, again, the querying and writing basic programming is, that's just table stakes. And that's, you haven't actually tackled the business problem yet.
That's just it, right? And so do you think this is, I mean, I've been kind of wondering this myself, and I think that, who was I talking about? Jordan Morrow, if you know who he is. He's like the, one of the founders of, data literacy.
Okay.
So I always jokingly call him the godfather of it, and he hates that. He lives in Salt Lake, incidentally, so we get together quite a bit, but he's got a new book coming out, end of year, which is basically Business 101 for Data People. Which I thought was interesting, because I think what I hear you saying too is it feels like data practitioners, we're really good at our craft of crunching numbers, but that's typically an aimless goal unless that is in support of some sort of outcome, ideally a business outcome or something like that. I mean, obviously there's people who do all sorts of wonderful things with data, like meteorologists and stuff, where that's not really a business outcome. That's predicting the weather and the patterns like that, and whatever else meteorologists do. I have no idea what they do, actually. Yeah, or oceanographers or whatever, right? Like all scientists are using data for something, but here we're talking about business data teams, right? And so, but what I often find is there's a huge disconnect between these teams and business literacy and just basic business literacy, which is kind of crazy.
I think that's exactly where I want to go. And so my argument then is like, and really this is, I think this is true for any manager anywhere, you are entrusted with resources, you know, time, people, money, and so on. And you're supposed to make a bigger pile out of a smaller pile, right? I mean, that's your whole point of being a manager, you know? And so if I think about like a data team, you know, again, these kind of maybe internal analytics teams, BI teams, and so on and so on, you know, we want to ask, why are these projects not more profitable? Why are they not more margin? And when you think about margin, it's really numerator and denominator, right? The most important thing, you know, the best data article I ever read was like, hey, don't forget the denominator, right? Mm-hmm. Right? We always talk about the numerator all the time. You know, but there's both a numerator and denominator in ROI, right? There's the value you generate and the cost you incur along the way. If you are a reactive team, let's say a service bureau and so on. Given some headcount, you say you're open for business and you start taking the tickets as they come in, right? You have relatively little ability to affect the numerator.
Mm.
You know, those tickets coming in because you're not choosing them, right? They're just coming to you. And let's say you do all of them coming in, right? At that point, the only thing left you can do is try to reduce the denominator, drive efficiency, right? Get more efficient, better documentation, so on and so on. But that's all fairly incremental.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you really want to produce a lot of ROI, you need to have control or influence over both of them. So instead of being reactive, you should be proactive. You should be engaged in selecting the projects you're doing, right? Finding the ones that have high value and relatively low cost to produce. And that's when you start getting ROI, right? And so I guess, and where would you find this in, you know, sort of shooting ahead a little bit, where would you find this in most organizations, right? If we're supporting better decisions, where are the big decisions? You know, you mentioned marketing always has a big budget, right? So look at the P&L, look at where the big numbers are.
The big decisions, you know, at least in my experience, are, well, there's two types. There's kind of the system two decisions that are really the strategic ones that will drive the business, or maybe in 3 to 5 years. But more short term, the stuff that you can impact now are the things that, I mean, I always tried to make it a point to put myself in the way of money. You know, because I think that that's the more interesting areas to be in. Those are the decisions that are going to move the business. So, but that was an intentional move because I observed that without that, I would just be stuck in cost center land.
Yeah.
Right. And then you're just playing defense the whole time. And, I don't know. I just get kind of bored doing that, being passive. So,
I think if you want to, I mean, where are the biggest decisions in any company? You know, they're at the sea level.
They're at the sea level.
At the sea level. Now,
and those are the system two decisions I was talking about, right? Where those are like the big impactful decisions, but you may not see the effects of those for years.
You might not.
They're
going to either have long-term decisions that are strategic, which have a huge ROI in the long-term compound interest. And the short-term decisions are usually where there's massive amount of loss going on. Like they're bleeding money because of something, or, you know, missing opportunities and so on and so on. And those are both cases where data can help. Knowledge teams can help. So like, you know, last time you and I talked, we talked about running, you know, taking over a data project or starting over.
Yeah.
And I think most people who are going to something like this would maybe sort of think small and go incremental, right? And like, okay, let me go help some operations manager produce some operational reports and so on and so on. And that's been my approach in the past too. Like do that and then iterate my way up. But now I'm wondering whether or not you can still think small. But why does the decision have to be small? Why can't I start with the C team and say, hey, what weekly, monthly decision are you being blocked on? And then drill down from there, right? If we're going to start with a business problem, why not start with the big business problems?
So this is an interesting dilemma that the data team would face, right? So on one hand, you want to have highest impact by working on these decisions, hopefully at the C level. And I've done this before. You've probably done this. And it's good, but it takes a while. So you'd have to make sure that the C-suite is on board with making that investment in you. Versus the other part of it is getting kind of the quick wins to show that you're valuable, right? And so that's sort of the catch-22, because you want to get those quick wins. So it's like, hey, we're getting quick wins, and we're solving problems, or we're producing, quote, business value. I think it would also depend on what company you're at too, right? So like if the executives want to give you the time of day, then sure. I mean, I was lucky enough to have that as my first job, where I sat outside the CEO's office and I was his right-hand person, you know, and basically anything he wanted, he would come to me and I would help him with it. Right. And so that was a very unique situation. I don't know that that's everyone's first job, but I got an MBA in the real world within about.
You were pretty early in your career, right?
Very early. Yeah. And that was, that guy took a big gamble on it, but he said, you seem pretty smart. Sit outside my office.
Right. So you didn't need, you know, 5 years experience writing store procedures, or you didn't need the ability to design a database, or you probably hadn't even heard of data modeling, right?
I mean, I was aware of all these things, but I was more interested in, at that point too. I mean, I had obviously a lot of good technical chops, but I started just, you know, binging on business books and learning business, right? And I think that's what made me effective. And I think once I was able to square that circle of being good at data and good at business, and that's a powerful combination.
Pretty powerful combination, right? Right. And then Oracle has succeeded now. They've just grown somebody who, or developed somebody who's going to be super valuable to them.
Oh, yeah.
And so there's an assumption I'm making on my part, right? I tend to live in the series A, B, C, D world, right? You know, companies that have searching for product market fit or have it and need to drive some efficiency and so on. You know, I'm not talking about the Amazons of the world or have existing.
Right.
Right. You know, but like if you are starting from scratch, right? why not start with the impactful decisions? Right, you're there to make a difference. Don't avoid the spotlight. You could still do small projects to show, deliver some quick wins, but do it within the context of some kind of vision. So you go to the C-level and you say, hey, which one of you is in the biggest pain? And have some discussion, and everyone agrees, like, you know what? We're really not getting the return we want with marketing. Okay, good. Work with that part, work with the CMO, and maybe you're drilling down from there. They're like, hey, we know you're not going to optimize our $20 million for spend right away, but hey, we're struggling with SEM and so on, and then drill down from there and create a container that your quick wins are going to be inside. And then you're already doing the storytelling right from the beginning then.
And you do get the empathy of the C-suite. I can see that. Like, I'll give you an example. Like, one of my clients, we're working with their exec team quite a bit, and there's kind of several companies that fit this bill. They're agriculture companies for some reason. In agriculture, whether we're talking produce or marijuana, which was one of the clients, you want to make sure that you are optimizing for yield. That's one thing. And then in some cases, you're optimizing for logistics, right? And so the CEO is always thinking about, in order to grow the business, I need to get more customers. How am I going to service customers given my supply of, say, marijuana in this case? And how am I going to effectively deliver it to make customers happy? That's my company. This is what we do. How do we make this better? Right. So in this case, data was, they engage us to pretty much serve that outcome. Because that's what's going to move the needle in the business. It wasn't, hey, can we get better dashboards? Or we want to be data driven. It's like, we're using data to drive our company, which is maybe flipping the data driven part on its head. Well, they're not thinking about the data. It's like, we want to sell more weed so we can make more money in this case, right? Pretty simple, right?
Right.
Business has been around for a long time. That business model has been around for a long time.
Yeah.
So, it's pretty simple. You could tell a 5-year-old this and they'd be like, yeah, right.
Yeah, and that's more evidence that so many data teams are not delivering that much value, right? Because they're like, we weren't able to meet their needs, so they just sort of went around us. And
well, what are these data teams doing then? Like, what are the things that you see them doing? Like, are they like just building like tons of DBT models or like?
It's not that they're not busy and not that they're not working hard. I think that a lot of it is the project selection and being pushed into a service stance, and then also being a little too fearful, right? So they're very reactive. If they're undersized, they don't necessarily have the capacity to go partner with people. I think a key factor to being successful is demanding the ability to say no to some customers.
Yeah.
Right? And it doesn't have to be an antagonistic relationship. It's a rational one. It's like saying to your boss, like, hey, if I try to do 20 different things, my fail list will be extremely long. Neither one of us wants that, right? How about I do one thing? That's what we learn in Scrum too, right? Well, let's limit the amount of stuff we put into the sprint so that we can actually be successful against those things.
Yeah.
All right. But if I just scatter my focus across the entire company, one decision here, one decision there, one decision there, really aren't I just partially solving multiple problems?
Well, it's just funny. I was rereading Peter Drucker's The Effective Executive, which is a classic book. Really good book. The audience, go get it. It's really good. But one of the things he touched on, I think his book was written a while ago, a long time ago, maybe the 50s even. But one of the things you touched on was like, effective. There's the effective executive doesn't work on more than 1 to 2 problems at a time. That's it. Right. Once you're done solving one problem, you can reshuffle your list, reprioritize, but no more than 2, maybe 3 if you're ambitious. But that you're starting to dilute yourself then. Solving one big problem at a time is how you produce results and impact in a business. And really, that's the job of an effective executive versus the ineffective one, which is stuck in meetings all day, being reactive. That's not an effective. That's an ineffective executive. That's an ineffective person, too.
Yeah.
By the way.
Yep.
So,
yep. I totally agree. Totally agree. And then, and what's the famous example of the turnaround CEO who took over Alcoa, and his whole focus is just safety, 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 right? And right, and they took, and they were rewarded with what, something like 10 years with a huge stock improvement.
Well, yeah, wasn't that CEO sort of derided as well at the beginning? Like, what are you doing? Like, why aren't you focusing on these short-term quarterly initiatives? And
Yeah, the story I heard is that people ran out of the board meeting like yell, to go sell stock, right? Right, but
but those are counterintuitive. That's not the kind of stuff they're going to teach you in B school either. Like, you say, oh, focus on safety, for sure, right? That's going to drive up your quarterly number.
sure.
But I think a lot of it too is it's. Now, I was actually writing about this the other day with respect to data modeling and how I feel like, because I was kind of looking at the history of it, really, and sort of where did it start falling by the wayside. I can point out a couple anecdotal things which I think are pretty coincident with kind of changes in practices in general. One of them was agile, and the other one was influenced by this book that Matt Housley suggested, which I read, The Man Who Broke Capitalism. It was about Jack Welch and how he. His short-term thinking with at GE basically cascaded through corporate America, and suddenly had this very short-termism, all about the bottom line,
All
screw
about
the worker, taking shortcuts, financial engineering, all this stuff, which pretty much you look at
like
GE
Boeing.
now, it's a cadaver of a company. What's
Yeah,
that?
or like what Boeing's been doing.
Well, so okay, so check this out. Boeing, they actually bring this up in the book too. So Boeing's exec team came from GE, and they brought the same Jack Welch bullshit into GE, and that's exactly what happened. So I was like, okay, but what this means is now every priority at most companies, if you're doing it, quote, the right way, right, is it's all about short-term initiatives. So what's impactful is who the hell knows, right? So if you're trying to find an impactful project, that's the other part of it. It's like, what does that mean exactly? Is it to drive share price? Because apparently everything's now about shareholder value, even though that was not always the case. That's something that, Jack Welch had pushed. But yeah, so it's interesting because it feels like the dynamics. Whereas if you're in Europe, for example, right, you're at a lot of family-run businesses, and these companies have been around for like 150 years or something like that, and it's the types of projects you're working on are just going to be different than they are here in the
Absolutely.
States.
Right. And and we're not going to cover all the concepts here, right?
Yeah, for
But
sure.
like it's the idea that you should be, if you're running a team, any kind of team, you're in business, right? And so you should be thinking about ROI, right? What's the value I deliver? What's the financial reward I get in return? Because that's our general curriculum, our general way of like measuring worth and having resources. And then I argue you should be thinking about the health of your team too, right? So those three things is my general ROI, general North Stars, and I try to balance amongst all three. And then you think about what's the window of return, and that's a question we forget all the time, right? We talk about
Yeah.
ROI, what's the window of return? If
That's a
you
big
tell
one.
me, right? If you say if we've got a if we've got a pizza shop, right, and you want me to maximize profit over the next 24 hours, all right. So I'm probably gonna cancel all future orders, right? You're gonna fire any employee who doesn't, need to be there. I'm gonna sell all the chairs, all the stuff, because that was the goal, right? But if you're maximizing profit over 3 years, totally different approach.
With other
Totally different.
constraints, like you can't fire anybody, right? And you have to do all these, you have to maintain quality, yeah.
I mean, take a 3-year approach. I'm thinking, oh, well, you know what? It would probably make sense for me to try to retain my employees, which means I have to treat them fairly, right? I want to maintain my reputation as a fair employer, these things like that. I probably want to participate in the community, totally different strategy, a different approach. And yeah, I
Yeah.
want to bring morality to it, but just it's just rationally to have a different approach if you
Of
have a
course.
different field return.
Yeah. And this impacts data teams. So I think, kind of in a nutshell, at least the one I'm taking away from this is the data teams, and especially the leaders of the data teams, need to have a level of awareness of the company they're operating in. Don't just cargo cult doing data stuff, which I don't think anyone intentionally does, but they end up doing it.
Fall in love with their own myth, right? I mean, you and I go to places like Coalesce, and there's not a business person there,
True.
and right, and we all tell each other it's a great time. I love going there. I love seeing those
I've
folks.
never
Those
actually been there. I've never been to Coalesce.
I've been to Coalesce. Oh, that's last time we saw each other was Snowflake Summit, and but at Coalesce, I mean, it's a great group, great people, but there's hardly any business users there, right? It's an easy place to fall in love with the community, and it's a great community, but like, you know, we can't do it by ourselves.
Can't do it by ourselves, no. And so it's my recommendation for whoever's listening to this is go talk to the business. You know, it's the same thing. It's the same old trope. Go talk to the business. You know, understand their business, understand their language, understand what they want, and deliver the things that's going to be impactful for them.
Be deliberate. Have a reason why you're doing
this. Yeah.
Right? Deliberate. If you're doing a project, know why you're doing the project. How's that going to benefit the company? How's it going to benefit you, right? You know, otherwise you're just going to be that service team that is not in control of their own ROI.
And you don't want to be that service team in this economy right now.
You do not. You do not want to be in a position where like, oh, what do I do this quarter? I got to cut costs.
The Grim Reaper's out right now. I hate to say it, but it's the reality of it. And if you're a data team that's being passive, playing defense, I fear for you. So I think the other part of this is be on the offense. Find those things that are going to be impactful. That's
it's a heck of a lot. It's a lot more fun too.
It's a lot more fun, man.
A lot more fun.
It's a lot more fun. Well, Gordon, it's been a lot of fun chatting with you again. So yeah, we'll do it again. We should probably just make this like a monthly thing, which we do. We have our standing call. We'll just turn this into a podcast. So
it'd be fun. Yeah, we should find another leg for the stool too. So and see what someone else has to add.
Yeah, I think that'd be good. I was going to invite Sol Rashidi on.
She'd
be good. She's a firecracker. So
maybe your audience can suggest some people.
That'd be great too. If the audience has some people that they think would be great for Gordon to chat to, drop
Doesn't
it in the comments.
Does that have anyone famous? Right?
No, in fact, I almost prefer that in some ways. Right? I want to meet somebody who's we don't know about. That'd be good.
All right,
we'll find a bunch of guests. Yeah,
come on, come join us.
Yeah, awesome. Well, thanks. Have a good day, Gordon.
Yep. Cheers.
Talk to you soon. Bye.